Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is my good friend and podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here.
Mike and I both have 40 plus years of experience in the semiconductor industry, and we live to tell about it. Mike, this is our 200th podcast. It's just amazing that we've done 200.
Yeah, that went by in a blink. It seemed like just yesterday you and I were discussing, wouldn't it be nice if we did a podcast on technology? And here we are, number 200. It really went fast. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember it was during the holidays in 2021, we put this all together. So to start out 2024, let's look back and make a top 10 list of things that changed the semiconductor industry landscape. So why don't you get started?
Okay, I'll kick it off here. For me, you know, having been in semiconductors and EDA like my entire career back starting in the mid to late 70s, in those days, and I worked at RCA at the time, which was a wonderful place where you could do both software development and chip design. You know, those were the days before there was an EDA industry. So if you didn't build it, you didn't have it, right? So in those days, I would tell people that I work at RCA in the solid state division, and they'd give me this weird look like, what do you do? What exactly goes on at RCA? They had no idea. Nobody knew what a chip was. Nobody knew what semiconductor meant. And it was true for many, many years until I'd say, you know, the past 10 years for sure, since the pandemic, absolutely. Chips have become commonplace discussion. I mean, the White House talks about them. We've got, you know, the CHIPS Act. We've got every world leader talking about semiconductors as a strategic advantage. And everybody knows what a chip is because they can't buy their car unless the chips are available. And everybody's finally figured that out. That drove home an awful lot of what it means. It's just, for me, the fact that semiconductors have become a household word and they are getting, in my opinion, the visibility they deserve as a driving force on the planet across lots of different levels of innovation is very... It's a happy time for me. It's like we're finally getting the recognition we deserve as an industry and as a group of people who were very smart and worked very hard for many years. So that's my number one, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. My kids actually know what I do for a living now. So that's a nice thing, right?
Yep.
Before they said, oh yeah, my dad does something in Silicon Valley. But they do ask funny questions like, hey, Dad, how come you can't make more chips, you know, during the shortage? And it was kind of funny. But, you know, during my career, I have spent most of my time orbiting around TSMC, you know, at least for the last 30 years. So TSMC is my number one. And, you know, they just continue to execute on their plans. And that's the big thing I would have to say about TSMC is they know how to execute. They took the process lead, you know, after what, 30 years, they took the process lead at 5 nanometer, and that has continued down to 3 nanometer. So the TSMC N3, by the way, they don't say 3 nanometer anymore because it doesn't really mean much, right? But the TSMC N3 process is absolutely dominant in regards to design starts. In fact, I've not been able to find a non-TSMC design start at any of the major companies, you know, down to 3 nanometer. And, you know, even Intel is using TSMC N3 for chiplets, which is simply amazing, right? And so, you know, I'm not seeing this type of process dominance for TSMC since, I don't know, do you remember 28 nanometer,
sure.
The gate first, gate last controversy?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Intel and TSMC won that one with gate last, and the gate first crowd, you know, of Samsung and IBM and UMC and Global Foundries, they didn't yield. So TSMC actually had to go on allocation for 28 nanometer because it was the only place to get it. Mm-hmm. And so 3 nanometer is the same way, except TSMC, you know, really builds fabs for customer orders. So they have plenty of 3 nanometer. You know, if you read that they don't, it's just not true because they build fabs to customers' orders. And, you know, if the customer needs a lot more chips, then there might be a little bit of shortage. But we have a lot of 3 nanometer fabs, and we're seeing 3 nanometer in or N3 in the Apple phones right now. Next year, it's the floodgates are going to hit. So this is really a record-breaking node for TSMC. Which brings us to the next node, which is, you know, 2 nanometer. Personally, I had thought that 2 nanometer would be skipped. You know, it's gate all around for all the foundries. And, you know, there's a lot of risk when you're changing devices and you're changing technology. And so my guess was that people would skip, you know, the big semiconductor companies would skip N2 and wait for the second implementation. But, you know, I was at IEDM last week and it's not true. Everybody is jumping on gate all around. You know, TSMC is N2, Intel is 18A, and Samsung is called 3 nanometer. And the guys at the IEDM said that the PDKs are out for these technologies, and they are doing quite well. In fact, I heard some first-person experience about the TSMC N2 PDK. I mean, it's correlating with test chips. Simulations are matching silicon. I mean, that's a pretty amazing thing, right, Mike?
I agree with you. I very, very clearly recall the difficult road to FinFET. And, you know, a lot of people remember that. So I kind of, like you, expected gate all around to be a much bumpier, much steeper road that maybe, you know, not that many people would take, but it's not the case. It is not the case.
No. But, you know, so far I've seen mostly TSMC N2 design starts. I mean, N3, just, I didn't see any other design starts other than TSMC. But I have seen a couple of companies working with Intel 18A and even Samsung 3. So, you know, now, for the first time in a long time, we have a three-horse foundry race. The pressure that TSMC gets from Intel is a really a good thing, right? It keeps them on the ball. And the other thing I would add is that just the final note on TSMC is they're also executing on the globalization strategy, which is, in my opinion, tied directly to the Taiwan Silicon Shield strategy. You know, in 2025, the fabs in Arizona and Japan will be in production, and the fab in Dresden should be well underway. And, you know, the U.S., Japan, and Germany are really strong partners for Taiwan.
Yeah. No, you're right. That gets back to the semiconductors have become a household word. They've become a key resource at a national and global level. So there's foundries being built everywhere. It's pretty exciting, actually, what's happening here.
Yeah. You know, as you said, Mike, politics is part of semiconductors now. And, you know, politicians are just pushing this for re-election. You know, I'm behind semiconductors, and I hope it continues. But, you know, now more than any time in the recent 10, maybe 20 years, you know, the defense electronics business and the semiconductors involved in that are front and center. So I think it's going to be an interesting decade for the foundries and, you know, in all regards.
Agree completely. Okay, so let's move on to my number 2, which is the explosion of AI in everything. You know, this has been really fun to watch, and it kind of ties back to the semiconductor industry in an interesting way. If you kind of look at the semiconductor industry of maybe 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, the chip manufacturers led the way, right? Intel would come out with a new microprocessor, and that would make a new market. Everybody would run to implement that in their server or their laptop. Same with Qualcomm and cell phones. That has changed, however. The semiconductor guys are not defining the markets. Software is now defining the markets. It's been said that every company is a software company, and there's, I believe, a lot of truth to that. The fact that software and user experience are defining markets and defining how businesses work is real. Now, the dirty secret in all of this, and AI is the probably the biggest piece of this, is that the incredible algorithms that people come up with for intelligent whatever, whether it's self-driving cars or airplanes or health monitoring or whatever, that software is unbelievably complicated. And the only way you can run that with speed that makes it relevant in the real world is with incredible processing power that comes from custom silicon for those algorithms. So it's you know, purpose-built chips for different algorithms. So the semiconductor industry is alive and well and driving the world as it always has, but it's not the leader, it's the follower, and it's the enabler for these incredible innovations around software and in particular AI. So that's just another reason. I mean, I've spent half my career in the ASIC business, and it does my heart good to see how important custom chips are these days. You know, for a long time that wasn't the case. It was, you know, the purview of the rich and famous, and it was very difficult to get a custom chip, and people would like look for huge discounts, and it was a real difficult business model. Now it's like everybody needs one, and most of the companies who need them, you know, money isn't the most important parameter. It's time to market, and performance are the most important parameters. And by the way, when you're selling custom chips, that's a wonderful scenario to sell into, and it's happening more and more. So the whole explosion of AI and everything, or smart everything, whatever you want to call it, is really being fueled by the semiconductor industry, because without those chips, you know, those wonderful algorithms would be irrelevant.
Yeah, I agree. AI is definitely driving the semiconductor industry. You know, the foundries have talked about it. And the thing about AI is they require as much performance as you can get. And AI is just exploding, you know, the die sizes. And it's all leading edge technology. And that really is funding the leading edge development, you know, which is quite expensive, these new fabs. But AI is pushing everywhere, even, you know, in the cloud, certainly, but also on the edge. It's an amazing phenomenon, and it really is going to drive the semiconductor industry for years to come.
I agree. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. You know, and the next number two for me is Intel, and Intel's new pitch is AI everywhere. So they're on the AI bandwagon as well.
Yep, there
but,
you go.
You know, Pat Gelsinger came back to Intel, you know, after quite a few years, you know, in the software business, and, you know, I think he's a really amazing guy. I mean, he is really out there stumping for Intel and the semiconductor industry in general. And, you know, he's in the news constantly. He's a charismatic guy, very energetic. And the IDM 2.0 strategy that he brought back to Intel is well on its way. And the Intel Foundry business, which is a big part of the strategy, their ecosystem is building up nicely. You know, with TSMC, ecosystem is everything. I mean, that really drives TSMC business. And, you know, without an ecosystem of EDA and IP and service providers, you know, a foundry really can't, you know, grow scale like TSMC has. But Intel really has invested. They've hired some key people. Some of them, you know, are friends of ours. And they really are working closely with EDA and IP companies. You know, I see it inside the ecosystem. It really is an impressive thing. You know, the big problem I have is that expectations, you know, being successful in the foundry business is years in the making. And so, you know, hopefully everybody realizes that. And, you know, the excitement of Pat, you know, hopefully that hasn't got them, you know, into some very high unrealistic expectations. But, you know, all this really hinges on their 18A process being successful. And, you know, again, I told you at IEDM, the 18A PDKs are out and they're looking very good. And so I have really high hopes, because we all want, you know, an alternative to TSMC. We all want, you know, multiple companies developing these leading edge processes, because the competitive nature of our business really is the foundation of our innovation. And so, you know, today it's clear to me that Intel Foundry will get the not TSMC business, which is the business for companies that, you know, want an alternative to TSMC. And Samsung has relied on the not TSMC business for the last few years. But I think moving forward, that will mostly go to Intel. But it's not clear to me if IFS will get competitive wins against TSMC. It really hinges on 18A. And we'll know next year. But right now, there's a lot of the PDKs out. People are really excited about it. And I think Intel Foundry Services, IFS, will be the number two foundry in probably the next 3 years.
That's an exciting prediction. I certainly hope you're right. I am certainly rooting for them. So with that said, let's move on to my number three, which is related to the previous one also. It also has to do with AI, but it's a different form of AI. It's the impact AI has had on chip design. As I mentioned, I kind of spent half my career in the ASIC business and the other half in the EDA business. So I'm very familiar with the problems, the challenges, and the opportunities for EDA software to excel and revolutionize the way chips are built. And AI has certainly had that impact, and I think we've only seen the beginning. For me, the interesting dimension to this is one of management of complexity. You know, we've got an awful lot of folks that are predicting all the jobs are going to go away and everything's going to be every engineer is going to be replaced by a piece of software. I don't believe that for a minute. There's been predictions like that for other industrial size revolutions, and it's never come to pass. What has come to pass is the automation makes things more efficient. It makes the people who know what they're doing that much better at what they do, and it creates a lot of new jobs along the way to feed the machine that becomes the new industry. And I think that's what's going to happen with AI and chip design. The number of possibilities for a chip, that the complexity associated with managing the choices to build an advanced semiconductor device is at least in the trillions, probably greater. Now, what better technology to keep track of all that stuff and sort it out and help the architects and the designers to find the right answer than AI algorithms? They're really good at that. And we're starting to see more and more of that. I view it as sort of like the bionic piece that gets bolted onto the engineer and makes them 100x more productive. That's what AI is going to do to chip design, which, by the way, is happening just in the nick of time, because you can read any number of projections, but we don't have enough engineers coming out of universities to fuel all the innovation and all the design work that needs to get done. So yes, we need more engineers, and there's plenty of very good activities going on to try and enhance that pipeline. But we also need to take the ones we have and make them a lot more productive, and AI is the answer to that. And you're seeing more and more of that. AI is really helping to focus the effort and find the right boundary conditions and the right starting points and the right choices to do the best possible chip that can be done. And that ain't easy. That takes lots of experienced engineers, many, many weeks, when a piece of software can do it in an hour and do it better, by the way, than the humans. There's been plenty of proof points on that too. So that's an exciting innovation and an exciting enhancement, I'd say, from the other side of AI. So it's kind of like, the joke is AI chips are really hard to design, but AI in itself is the answer to make AI chips easier to design. And that's certainly been the case.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you know, EDA is a very competitive business, so it doesn't surprise me that they jumped on AI quick. And yet, it's definitely going to help us do these complicated chips, in a much shorter amount of time, which is definitely important for us in the semiconductor industry. You know, my number three is going to continue along the foundry theme, but it's SMIC. You know, they hit it big this year when they produced a 7-nanometer caliber SoC for Huawei. You know, people didn't think they could do it because of all the restrictions on the equipment for China and such, but it really is a solid 7-nanometer process, and, you know, thus defying the U.S. sanctions and all the political ramifications. But, you know, just remember, TSMC did 7-nanometer without EUV, and then they added EUV to make it, you know, an easier process. But the 7-nanometer from TSMC N7 still is the dominant process node. And so, you know, Huawei did this using the SMIC process. And, you know, the process is still within the limits of what optical double patterning can achieve, and even has some room for additional shrinks. So, you know, there's rumors of a 5-nanometer chip from SMIC, and I think you'll see one, a 5-nanometer SoC from Huawei in Chinese smartphones in the next year or so. You know, after that, who knows? The semiconductor industry is filled with really smart people who love a challenge. And my guess is that China will get down to 3-nanometer by hook or by crook, but they will definitely get there. So SMIC really is my number three.
Yeah, makes sense. I think they're definitely one to watch. So let's see. For me, the number four, multi-die design, is a real thing. It is the future. It is becoming mainstream. Most companies no longer think of a complex semiconductor system as being just one monolithic gargantuan chip, and you put as much as you can on the chip, and then you're done. Now it's sort of like, what combination of silicon can I pack in a package to get the job done? We're looking at, you know, organic interposers, silicon interposers, 2.5D, 3D. You know, Intel's talking about glass substrates and doing some very innovative things in backside power delivery to kind of help the density of these packages. It's a well-known fact that Moore's law from a single monolithic chip point of view is slowing down. It's taking longer to get to the next node, and when you finally get there, with all the efforts to get there, the payoff is less than it used to be. it's still really important, and it's still a driver for next generation technology and innovation. But something's got to take up that slack, and what's taking up the slack is different architectures that are building multiple processors and multiple purpose-built accelerators, all being integrated into one complex package, not necessarily from the same technology node, and certainly not from the same piece of silicon. I mean, the silicon gets too big and the yield gets too low, and it becomes problematic. But you don't have to do that. You can cut the problem down to size and build a collection of devices that really get the job done. And given the architectures that are available for interconnect of these things at very fine pitches and get the power out of it efficiently and reduce the power along the way, by the way, as well, it's another ingredient of Moore's law of the exponential complexity curve. Is not single chip, but it's multi-chip. So the multi-die design movement, I think, is very real and is going to have a fundamental impact on the entire industry. There's a lot of pieces that still need to be worked out here from an ecosystem and supply chain point of view, but I have no doubt they will be worked out, and we'll see a new wave of innovation and exponential complexity fuel coming out of this kind of design style. So that's exciting to watch too.
I agree. You know, chiplets, just one other perspective from the foundry business, but chiplets allow people to work with multiple foundries on the same chip. You know, that has gone away with the FinFETs. You know, everybody was just doing one design on one foundry, and it's, you know, partly technology, partly, you know, legal NDAs, et cetera. But with chiplets, you can go to different foundries at different process technology nodes and then package it all together. And, you know, we're seeing some of that with some of the bigger companies, Intel, AMD, and NVIDIA. But really, there's going to be a commercial chiplet market coming to a foundry near you. Yeah. In a short period of time. You know, Mike, as you said, AI has exploded in, you know, on in the cloud and on the edge, and is driving the semiconductor industry. But, you know, on SemiWiki, surprisingly, automotive is still a major topic. So automotive is my number four. I mean, there are hundreds of automotive related domains hitting SemiWiki, and I had to look these people up because I didn't know them. You know, it's all the car companies, every single major car company, and then hundreds of other, you know, parts for the car. But, you know, from the looks of it, to me, there's a bubble ready to pop, especially, you know, in these huge amount of vendors for this one fairly small, fairly, you know, a constant industry. But, you know, I think part of the excitement is that cars are very personal to people, right? You know, we all have a personal relationship with our cars, even more so than smartphones, I think. And, you know, I would say that automotive safety right now is at a premium. I mean, we all think about it. There's more chips in a car. There's more control we're giving to the car. So the safety of this whole thing is really important. And, you know, when you design chips for cars, it's a lot different than designing them for phones. You know, cars, you have aging. They have to last, you know, 10 to 20 years versus a phone, you know, 1 to 2 years maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what's funny is I just saw this clip on CNBC, and it stated that Tesla drivers are in more accidents in the U.S. than any other drivers. And it also stated that BMW drivers have the highest DUI rates. And, you know, as a Porsche driver, I completely agree, especially about the Tesla drivers.
Well, I drive BMW, so I'll drink to that.
I know you do. That's why I said that.
Okay, so we're on the home stretch here. So my fifth one, not necessarily the least important, but I just decided to save this one for last. And it has to do with the changing of the guard at an iconic EDA company. The changing of the CEO role at Synopsys is coming up, as Art DeGioia will be stepping down as CEO after many, many years of leadership and the company, and Sassine Ghazi will be stepping in as the new leader of the corporation. So that's a big deal, right? It doesn't happen all that often, that kind of change, especially in incredible companies that have been driven by one person for so many years. We'll run out of time if I give you the whole history, but I first met Art when he was still working at General Electric after GE bought RCA, before he even formed Optimal Solutions that became Synopsys. So I've known Art a long time, and he's done a remarkable thing for the industry, and he's become a true statesman and orator and a visionary for the whole for the whole industry, not just for Synopsys. It's his impact is far bigger than just one company. But you know, change is inevitable. So I think it's actually an exciting time. I can say that I do know something about the new leader. I spent 2.5 years recently working at Synopsys, helping them with their retooling of the company into the systems and complete solutions business. And I worked with Sassine while I was there. I did a lot of his presentations. He is the real deal. I mean, he's come up through the ranks at Synopsys. He is a problem solver. He loves listening to customers and figuring out what's preventing them from being successful, and then going back and driving really hard to come up with a solution that addresses that problem. That's who he is. The customers love him because he loves to listen to them, and he acts on the information that is provided. So I think he's the perfect guy for this job, and he'll rally the troops and take the company to newer heights than they've already seen. So I'm excited to see that happen, and I honestly wish him the very best. I think he's the right guy. Number one, Art DeGioia is a hard act to follow. And number two, taking on a company the size of Synopsys and keeping that momentum going is also a tall order. And not everybody is cut out for that kind of challenge, but I think Sassine is. So I'm excited to watch that and see what happens next.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I know Art very well. I don't know Sassine as well, but you know, he founded the company and he ran the company and he brought it to number one, right? And I would say, you know, that would make him the top EDA CEO of all time.
Yeah, agree.
So last but not least is RISC-V. It's the number one topic on SemiWiki. It's been number one for the last couple of years. You know, check out our podcast number 190 with Calista Redmond, and you'll see why. I mean, it is the perfect storm, you know, ARM being acquired by a conglomerate and then being spit back out, the technical power and economics of open source, and the sheer number of microcontrollers in our products. I mean, RISC-V really hit the timing perfectly on this one, and it really is one for the semiconductor record books. You know, Mike, you and I both attended the RISC-V summit recently. I mean, what did you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I was honestly shocked with the size and the scope of the presentations and the technology and the companies involved. It was like way bigger than I expected it to be. I had been to the show a few years before, and my goodness, it's a whole new world. So yeah, it's very real. It's exciting to see open source getting traction in the hardware world. God knows it's been doing well in the software world for a long time, but we're starting to see it happen in the hardware world.
Yeah, you know what struck me is the international collaboration of it all. You know, we saw papers from China, some incredible papers from China on new technologies and new uses for RISC-V. And India, my gosh, you know, they are a huge source of RISC-V technology and innovation. And, you know, all throughout Asia and Europe, I mean, it is truly an international collaboration. And I think that is really the key to success with this type of technology. Well, Mike, let's wrap this up. Thank you again for partnering with me on this podcast series. I mean, we started with nothing, and now it is really a huge success. I mean, the numbers are impressive. All the traditional outlets carry the podcast, Semiconductor Insiders. And, you know, truly more people listen than they read these days. So we really timed it right. And thanks for your effort. And, you know, thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks, Dan. It's been a lot of fun doing this, and it's been great collaborating with you on this. And boy, we've heard from some very smart people over these past 200 podcasts, some really memorable stuff. And I'm delighted and honored to be part of that, delivering that information to everyone.
Absolutely.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.